Hello, everyone. This is your old pal, Wheezy Rattledge, here on the Rattledge and Broadcasting Network. And tonight we bring you another fine podcast. Tonight is because Jesse made me. You know Jesse. He's the host of Source Material and the third chair on the Metal Hammer of Doom. And he's a pretty cool fruit who really knows where his towel's at. Well, when I put out the invite for one and all in my social media world to come on this show and twist my arm and make me watch something I wouldn't normally watch, he said, ah, I got to get that ready to go. Because I made Jesse do read a thing or two that he didn't want to read, do a thing or two he didn't want to do. So he said, all right, I got one for you, Rattledge. And so tonight, because Jesse made me, we are going to talk about the documentary that has been all the rage on Netflix about the fellas that are all the rage left of center with all the hipsters. Ladies and gentlemen, tonight's film that we will be discussing is a documentary called Minimalist. Jesse made me watch it. Jesse came on the show to talk about it. And so without further ado, here he is, folks, the great Jesse Starcha. How are you doing, sir?
Hey, good evening, Mark Rattledge, or should I say, Senior Hackenkoff?
It's Wheezy to you, sir. I'm gonna do a diary one of these days, another one of Mark's diaries, talking about what's going on with me right now. And it's going to be entitled, and it might already be up when you're listening to this, depending on when this goes up, careful with that Mike Wheezy. I am no longer the mandated reporter. I am now Wheezy Rattledge. That's how I would prefer to be known. So when you address me, you will always start your sentences with, careful with that Mike Wheezy.
And what's funny is we spent about 10 minutes earlier messing with your mic. So, hey, careful with that mic, Wheezy. Thanks for having me, buddy. I tell you what, thank you for having me on here to do this. I'm very pleased you kind of opened your doors and said, as I think Sean would put it, come at me, bro. Bring anything on. You know, and people, I just actually finished Gavin's entry into because Gavin made me, I guess, because blank made me with give me the name of it. Tell me the name of the movie.
There Will Be Blood.
There you go. Yes. Just finished that yesterday. As a matter of fact, I've never seen it, but I enjoyed the podcast. So,
okay.
Yeah.
What you could hear of it, I'm sure.
You did fine. I enjoyed it. So we were talking earlier. Yeah, I'm going to let you go through the intro or whatever you want to do here in a second. But we were talking earlier about, doing this documentary. And one of the things that you said was source material for documentaries or something like that in our chat. Did you know that I actually had a podcast there? I don't know if I put any episodes on the Rattledge and Broadcasting Network, but I was definitely doing it on the Screaming Boy side of things where I was intent. And just to, spoiler alert, I still haven't followed through with it because, by golly, I just don't have enough time. But I was going to go through every documentary in alphabetical order that was on Hulu and do a podcast on them.
I am aware of this. And I was actually wondering about what the hell happened to it. Like, did it flame out? Did you guys just lose interest? And now the mystery has been solved. But, I didn't get a chance to listen to him, but I was interested in what you were doing. Because, as we all know, not only am I Wheezy Rattledge, but I'm also known as The Schedule.
That's true. Mark, The Schedule.
And now, you were not privy to the conversation that took place prior to us airing tonight, but my wife and I had somewhat of a heart-to-heart, and I can't get into everything that was said, but one of the things that came up was the tacit acknowledgement on both of our parts that I could probably stand to stop scheduling my life as much as I do. That might be beneficial to my health, maybe.
Oh, man.
So, when I saw that you were... And I don't look at it as scheduling as such. I resent the implication, madam.
Resemble.
I don't know if you caught that. For those of you that might not have, you said I resemble, not resent. I'm using the wrong word. No, I am insulted. This is the issue here. I like to think of myself as ambitious. And then here comes Jesse Starcher with this crazy project where he's going to review all these documentaries on with the folks over at the Screaming Boy podcast. And I was impressed. I looked at that and I was like, good go for yours, Jesse Starcher. Here you went from listener to podcaster to ambitious podcaster. I was proud of you. And then you shit the bed on me.
Oh, come on now. Let me tell you. Okay. Pretty much what had happened is I, as much as I'd love to sit down and watch one of these and do a review on them and speak with somebody, it's a matter of finding the time to do a podcast and get that other person in on that podcast. I didn't want to take away from projects such as the Metal Hammer of Doom and Source Material. So I thought at some point I will either try and go back and revisit it. So it's one of those things that, what's that term you guys use? Indefinite hiatus?
Yeah, something like that.
But tonight we, you know, I get the opportunity. I love documentaries. I don't know if you're a big documentary fan. Do you enjoy watching documentaries?
I do. I enjoy a good documentary. I think the last one that I watched was on Twisted Sister, which I really enjoyed. But I will watch them. I enjoy them. I'm no Luddite as such, but I don't watch as many maybe as I know there's a lot of good ones out there, and it's not my first choice to watch. You know, I do watch a lot of reality television, competition television.
Very similar. I mean, almost very. I mean, other than some of that stuff that really has that heavy edit or the heavy vibe of they're trying to, put on some kind of a plot that really isn't there. But yeah, that's still very much in the vein.
Mm-hmm. I like shows like Top Chef. Top Chef's probably the best and the biggest example of something that I really enjoy watching that is reality based. And you absolutely know that the producers are encouraging some of these shows. I mean, it's not as bad as Gordon Ramsay's Hell's Kitchen, where they're actively egging these morons on and these morons are totally going with it.
Yeah.
His MasterChef show is much more genuine. Top Chef definitely plays to some of the more, we'll call them eccentric personalities of these professional chefs. And I enjoy it. Now, I enjoy it because of the food porn aspect of it, but there's definitely some storytelling element there as well that adds to the fun. I mean, I definitely end up rooting for one chef over another because one of them's a bag of dicks and the other one isn't. That sort of thing. So when you suggested it to me, to get to the point of all this, I definitely wasn't like documentaries. Ew, isn't something going to explode? No. Contrary to popular belief, back in my independent film days, I watched a lot of documentaries. I was very into it. Mm-hmm. I just like you. You get older, you get families, you get wives, and even wives that go to bed early, you still got to spend time with them. Hi. So
she's giving you the evil eye.
she turned around and said, "Are you addressing me?" So I don't get to watch as many as I would like. That's all.
Sure. Well, with that that ambitious project that we were talking about earlier, it was with the documentary diary. The neat thing about that was I was going to force myself to watch stuff I didn't particularly care for. Because if you're going to stick with alphabetical order, you know, when you go from aliens to 9/11, there might be somebody out there that makes a connection between the two. But, you know, it was interesting because there was stuff I wasn't going to watch at all. Now, this right here, this documentary that we're going to talk about tonight actually came about when we were doing Source Material for the Flintstones. And remember the crap issue. I assume you remember the crap issue, the one where, you know, Fred and Barney could not, they had to get a second job selling vitamins in order to pay for all the crap that everybody was getting.
Right.
During that conversation, you mentioned, or maybe it was plugs, you mentioned the topic of this show, and this was the first thing I had thought of. I never saw this documentary yet, but I was like, you know, there's a minimalism documentary on Netflix. So that's going to be my shot. We'll see what we can do tonight, and I want to hear what you came away with. So is there anything you want to intro this in any way, or you want me to go for it? How you want to do this?
No, man. You know what? I know with the Gavin show, I treated it as a traditional movie review. I kind of did my spiel. I let Gavin had his say. We debated some points. I actually kind of want this. I want this to be your baby, and you introduce it. You bring it up, and you guide the questions. I think that's the best way to do this.
All right. Well, Minimalism, a documentary about the important things. Okay, this was released in 2016, and according to the wiki, it was they have it listed as 2015 here, but I know it made Netflix there right before the end of the year. Definitely focuses on Ryan Nicodemus. I'm trying to remember the other guy's name, but these two guys,
Joshua Pedophile Face.
Not the two things I put together.
Oh, even my wife thought he looked creepy.
Oh, come on, poor guy.
Look, he seems like a decent fella, and I feel bad about his mama. But if you don't think that man looks like Chester Molesta, sir, I don't know what the hell documentary you were watching.
All right. So these two guys put together this documentary. And are you familiar with the concept of minimalism? Is this something you've ever heard before?
I mean, I don't think I've heard it as a lifestyle as such, the way these two talked about it. Certainly the idea of, I mean, let's face it, when we talked the Flintstones, which you can hear on the Rattledge and Broadcasting Network in the archives under source material, we did address the fact that as consumers of the 21st century, we over the years accumulate a lot of crap. And then you marry a person who has their own crap. And then you have kids and you end up buying crap for the kids. And suddenly you're drowning in nonsense.
Yeah.
Now, I didn't need two guys in a documentary to tell me that. I was living it.
What? So you're aware. Yeah. At least you're a person that's aware of what's going on. You aren't one of these people who are completely blind to the fact that we obviously live in a very consumerist nation where we just go out and buy things just to have things or just to upgrade.
I knew somebody who was just starting out in marketing, and I want to say the story was she quit her marketing job because it was all about just trying to manipulate people into buying more garbage mm-hmm. that they don't need. She being of somewhat and having a sense of integrity about her, could not go through life knowingly manipulating people into doing things against their own will, against
she's got a conscience.
Their own good. Yeah. So she quit marketing. And yeah. I don't know what she's doing now, but that little bit of her life, and I don't remember who even the person's name is anymore, but that has always stuck with me. That there are people who, you know, you will ask to do a thing and they won't be able to do it because it just they can't live with themselves.
Yeah.
By doing that thing.
Yeah. Now, did she quit like the one guy that was in this documentary? There was a guy who was making a six-figure salary. He said he had a corner office. And December 31st, guy walks in, his boss walks in and says, "You've got a promotion, man." And then he realizes, I can't, if I continue on this path, I'm just going to be trapped because I won't be able to get out of the amount of money. Doesn't sound like this guy didn't have a crisis of conscience. He was just aware of the fact that, okay, I'm living the lifestyle that I'm living, and all I'm going to do is continue to have excess and excess. This lady, it sounds like she had a crisis where she was like, I can't do this to people who are, well, everyday schlubs. What did she go into something different? Any idea? I mean,
yeah, when she was in college.
Okay.
So she changed majors.
Okay.
Like once she realized she was learning how to sell shit people didn't want, to, you know, people who didn't need it. She was like, yeah, fuck this. And I don't know, became a librarian.
I wouldn't mind doing that. I came really close to doing marketing in college. I just stuck with general business. But, man, I would have loved – I always loved the marketing aspect of things. I can remember them – international marketing was one of the most intriguing classes I ever took, where you had to keep in mind the culture of the, you know, of the country or whatever that you're in when you did advertising. And I think one of the, like the slogan for Diet Coke or Diet Pepsi ended up translating into, you know, it'll bring your relatives back from the dead. Got lost in translation there just a little bit. But anyway, back to the documentary here. So these two guys, I thought minimalism. I'm thinking, well, these guys are going to just take all their possessions, get rid of every single one of them, and then go out on the road and live off the earth and not have a house. That's clearly not the case. That's a very extreme way of becoming a minimalist, I'm sure. But this felt more like, okay, look, you need to reduce the amount of shit that you have in order to be happy. There's a big correlation between, it seemed like they were making a point that there is a lot of unhappiness with the more possessions that you try to surround yourself with. What do you think of that concept? We'll revisit it now. I mean, do you think that there's some truth in that?
Yeah, I can only speak to these things personally. My field of behavior understanding and interpretation, my field of psychology deals with drugs, deals with antisocial behaviors, you know, those folks in incarcerated settings, juvenile detentions, that sort of thing. So I'm not going to speak to this from a mental health standpoint. I can only speak to this from a personal standpoint. The happiest I've ever been in my life has been, whether they realize it or not, has been the closeness and the relationships I formed with my wife and children. And if you took everything away from me, if you took the house, you took, our clothes, you know, and just left like a few things to wear so you don't die or get arrested for public nudity. If you took it all away and we somehow had to, you know, move into a smaller apartment or move in with my in-laws or something like that. If you took away all of our comforts, but the relationships were still there and we still had each other, I'd still be happier. Because I know the opposite is true. When I had nobody and when I had nothing in my life, but I had an apartment full of my own stuff, I wasn't nearly as happy.
Yeah.
I watched a black and white Porky Pig cartoon where he gets married and I bursted into tears.
I shouldn't be laughing. That's a very sad statement.
Granted, I just left a wife at the time. You know, I was in between wives, like you do, Jesse.
I hear you.
If you lose the one wife, get yourself another wife. That's what I'm trying to tell you. But I had a relationship that had just hit the rocks, and I was in this place where, you know, as he talks about in the documentary, he's reading from the book and he's like, what kind of cappuccino machine defines me?
Yeah.
And you know, I had stuff in my apartment that was my own. And even before that, even before my first marriage, when I moved to Miami, I lived by myself. I furnished that apartment pretty much all on my own with my own money. And I was lonely. I was sad and I was frustrated, and none of the books and movies, of which I own tons, or thousands of CDs, made me anywhere near as happy as hugging my daughter and telling her I'm proud of her when she does something cool.
Yeah.
Or listening to her tell me, that she wants to do a podcast with me because she sees that that's what I do and she wants to do something with me to be close to me.
Aww.
Or when my son runs from across the room, smashes into me and says, I'm the flesh. This is his new thing. So, and the same thing with my wife, I've gone out, I've been around the world, Jesse. I've seen a lot of things and I've done a lot of stuff. But the most mundane things, going to IKEA or, just going to, Fuzzy's Tacos or our surf taco place and seeing a movie are some of the best memories I have because I did them with my wife.
Yep.
I've seen thousands of concerts in my time, all across the world. But the ones that I remember the most are the ones I saw with Melissa, mostly because she's hilarious at them. Scared of Nazis and Meshuggah, playing with her hair at Dragon Balls. She's hilarious. And that's what I'll always remember, other than getting punched in the eye at Helmet. So that's also a memory I can't seem to get away from. So that's sort of my long, bloviating answer to your question. But yeah, no, I get it. material things in the end don't make you happy. Relationships make you happy. We're social creatures.
Yeah. Yeah. And another point I think they were trying to drive home with this was the fact that the more material items that you have in your life, the less time you may find that you have to spend with those loved ones. I'm all for, I used to be a heavy gamer, but I played some games. I can remember when prior to Kira being born, my firstborn daughter, 2005 or so, I can remember, you know, sitting on the couch playing Madden every night. Okay. Mm-hmm. Now after my daughter was born, I started to realize that, you know, hey, the more time I take to do this, the less time I'm having to spend with her. Right. And that goes with my wife as well, you know, and my, you know, the rest of kids, as time goes through, you'll notice this in any aspect of either in your own life or other people's lives, where you can see that one thing that somebody is, that one material thing that somebody is completely focused on, that to you, you may be like, why are you spending so much time doing that? A lot of times the answer is, well, if they enjoy it, let them do it. But I think there's an argument to be had when that one materialistic thing, if it's not bringing you value, if you're sitting there and you're playing Madden over and over and over, and I have nothing against Madden, but just using it as an example, and you've got your kids sitting in the next room, hey, daddy, come play with me, or hey, kid, here's your phone, go watch your phone. I'm going to sit here and play video games for the next hour and a half. There is a lot of that that goes on, even in my house. I'll sit here and freely admit it. I'm guilty 100% of doing that. And minimalizing someone's life can, not only does it take away some of those things that really don't need your attention, it gives whatever that was or whatever was there the opportunity to give that attention to something that actually means something in your life. That's kind of what I took from this. Did I ever tell you this, the time I tried to do no TV summer?
No.
Which it turned into no TV week because that shit was not going to happen all summer.
It didn't work out the way you wanted it to, eh?
Oh, my gosh. It was a valiant effort that failed miserably. But I always regret the fact that, you know, I would have just – if you take the TV out of your room, that one thing – that everybody uses, watches, it really would make a difference in somebody's, because now all of a sudden you've got to interact. This is not news. You know, now you don't have anything. You don't have that one thing you've been staring at and keeping quiet for the last 3 or 4 years, even longer of your life. Now all the kids have to interact and everybody has to talk and, oh, wait a second, we might have to go outside. Look. I tried. I actually have on my Facebook page, I have a diary of how that went, and it stopped. Seriously, I think it was about a week after I started it. And a lot of that is because summertime, the kids are home all day long and it's tough. It is very tough.
No, so there's two things with this. One, that's actually the premise of a Family Guy episode.
Oh, where, really?
Where Peter has something like a crisis of faith or whatever. Something happens to him, and he's like, I am not going to sit around and let the TV dominate my life. And he starts, like, taking the kid, you know, at first, it's great. You know, he's finally taking interest in his kids and his wife and everything, and they're just loving it. They're like, you know, because if you know anything about Family Guy, Peter just is a lump who just sits on the couch and does nothing. After a couple of weeks of that, his family's fucking exhausted. And Les is like, can we just sit on the couch and watch TV one day? You know, like, we love that you're so energetic and everything, but God, you know, get a grip.
What? Yeah.
And then, you know, Peter, of course, is, you know, he's not having it. And then I think he gets into an accident and he has to sit down on the couch. I think even before that, though, Lois was like, oh, kids, we've lost him.
Oh.
So there's that. I mean, it's I think that's a pretty well accepted thing. People know that. But I'm going to tell you a quick story. It just happened. As a matter of fact, my wife and I had a bit of a disagreement about it. But on the Rattledge and Broadcasting Network, depending on when you're listening to this, Pat Mullen and I did a alternative commentary for the UFC on Fox, Shevchenko versus Pena, Saturday night, January 28th, I believe. And we haven't done one of these alternative commentaries in a really long time, and I really like doing them. I gave up the Ground and Pound show, one, because Sunday nights at 8 or 9 o'clock just became untenable, and two, I just wasn't into the minutia of MMA like I used to be, and trying to get prepared for that show, and three, Jeff Harris. So I gave it up and I walked away. But I still like to watch MMA, and I like to talk about it with people who are knowledgeable and not a giant douchebag. And say what you will about Patrick Mullen, but he knows his pugilism.
Oh yeah,
he knows his fighting. And I always thought him, me, and Robert had a really good chemistry, calling the action and being brutally honest about what was happening. We didn't have to sell it to anybody. You know, we didn't have to make you believe that what you were watching was entertaining if it wasn't.
Mm-hmm.
And we could totally shit on fighters who brain farted. So the alternative commentary thing was sort of our protest against the Goldberg 5000, you know, and Joe Rogan every 5 minutes talking about why, you know, they need better gloves to stop people from poking each other in the eye and getting kicked in the nuts. You have to watch a lot of MMA to get that. So long story short, too late. We decided we're going to do one of these. We haven't done one in a while. And it's like right after work. So the show's starting at 8. I don't get out of work till 7:30, and it's a 20-minute drive home, which means that I'm literally wheezing and all, running through the bitter cold to get to my car, trying to not have an asthma attack or die, speeding home so that I can get into the door. And in the middle of all this, I'm changing all of my sound equipment so that, you know, I'm not having the sound cutouts that have plagued me all of 2016 and the beginning of 2017. So I have to find new mics. I've got to get my phone set up. I had to have my wife pull my laptop out of mothballs. This whole thing happened. It was very dramatic. But the point of all this was, and so the people understand, like, why? What? Are they ever going to talk about the documentary? Yes, that's the point of this story. You know, my wife spends the weekends that I'm working alone with these kids for 12, 13 hours. And they, like, wait by the door when I come home. My wife, because A, she wants to spend time with me. B, because finally she has her partner here to assist in taking care of these little tornadoes that we have in the house. My children just want to be with their dad.
Yeah.
And I blast in the door, basically knock my kids out of the way, run to the couch, start demanding my wife bring me audio equipment. By the way, she's also made me a dinner that I requested that I did not eat because I'm doing this.
You are pushing her luck.
Yeah, I don't understand why she got mad at me. Anyway, So I go, like, all this happens, and I get everything ready to go, and, you know, and I'm trying to take bites in between. I'm realizing that I'm now chewing into the mic, so I got to stop. But we do, you know, and I'm also with these excited children who just want to be with their dad. I'm trying to get them to shut the fuck up so that I can do my podcast. And my kids are, quote-unquote, as I find out the next day, devastated that, quote-unquote, why doesn't daddy want to talk to them?
Oh, no.
Yeah, I felt slightly heelish.
Oh, man.
Wife's feelings are hurt. Kids are devastated, all because it was important for me to do this podcast at the cost of my relationship with the people closest to me, as I said before. So, yes, if you focus too much on the material things, and let's face it, these podcasts are, in a way, therapeutic for me. They are another relationship-building technique. I have friends that I did not have before by doing this. But let's be serious. They are also a product.
Yep.
They are a thing. At the end of the day, if the Rattledge and Broadcasting Network goes away and I don't have podcasts, I still have my family.
That's right.
And I harmed, in many ways, my family in favor of spending time with this thing. That's an important element to remember, is that you don't want to elevate the things in your life over your relationships, especially the ones that are most important to you.
Yeah, one of the things that...
Hang on, one sec. Are All you right. fucking happy now?
Jesus.
I mean, I was being genuine. You know?
She's in there wiping a tear away. She's so proud of you. Then all of a sudden she hears that.
Yeah, I got to keep it regular. She gave me a thumbs up.
All right, there you go. So, yeah, one of the things that I believe one of the closing comments of that on that documentary from one of the guests that they had on there, the many slew of people that they had talking, he was talking about the balance, you know, the balance of things versus the things that we need versus the things that, you know, we want. Clearly you want this podcast to be successful. You want to sit down and you want to have a good time and chat with your friends, but we need our families. We need our kids to understand that we love them. So it's always a struggle trying to balance that stuff out. So let me switch gears here on you, take you to another aspect of this documentary. Cause one of the first things they show at the beginning of this thing, what do you think of the tiny houses?
I mean, if that's what makes you happy, I got the point of it. But I think what the long-haired hippie looking guy said later on in the film.
We should have wrote these names down. We got pedophile McFunky Face, long-haired hippie guy.
Yeah. I got to talk about them in particular because they almost took me out of the documentary. But you haven't asked me about that yet. One of the things the long-haired hippie guy said, you know, and he was referencing someone saying, but I have all these books and I don't want to give up my books. And he's like, okay, don't.
Yeah. Yeah.
You don't have to. There are ways to minimize your life without, you know, without being prescriptive that everyone must do it a certain way. The tiny houses thing worked for that one chick. It worked for a couple of other people. I actually thought, you know, I wish we could do the tiny house thing. I think in Utah, like, they solved a big homeless issue by just giving everybody houses.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And so why not give everyone tiny houses? Mm-hmm. I actually think on Long Island, there's an area of Long Island called Tiny Town where the houses are like extremely small, maybe not that small, but pretty close. And so that's where I'm at with this is if that works for you, fine. I don't think it would work for me. And it's not because I want to amass a lot of stuff or I even want to live in a big house. I mean, our house that we live in now is three bedrooms and I don't know, like 1100 feet, maybe 1300 feet. But just the way that it's designed, we lose a lot of wall space and it could afford to be a little less cluttered, but it's still a small house, but it's the right size house for us.
Sure.
It's just enough space to get away from each other if you need to, but it forces us to still be together. You know, there's never going to be a time where my kids can be in a part of the house and I can't hear them.
Yeah.
First of all, my fucking kids are so loud, you could hear them in another state. But God bless them. But yeah, it just to sum up, if that works for you, I think it's great. It's just not going to work for everybody. It's certainly not going to work for me.
Yeah. I think one of the stats that they threw out was that 40% of our living space is what we use. And the rest, the other 60 is stuff that just sits there.
Yeah.
And I honestly can see that in my house because, well, I mean, we got five people in this house, all, you know, me and Mindy and the kids. I use this one space I'm sitting in right now for, I don't know, 8 to 10 hours a day. Eight of it's working. And then, you know, a couple hours doing podcasts or editing and doing stuff like that. I'm looking over at this basement and I can tell you that I don't go over to that section of the basement unless I need to go to the freezer and grab the two or three things that I need and then go right back upstairs. So I think the concept of a tiny house, I honestly would love to try something like that because boy, would life change. What do you think? What do you think would be the first thing that changed in your household if you guys had to do a tiny house?
I mean, I guess the first thing is we'd all be living on top of each other.
You think so?
You have three children. I have two. There's math involved.
Well, how do you alleviate that? That's I think what really a tiny house would do is it makes you think of like, okay, we're going to be on top of each other. How do we fix that? You have to have a yard. Are you guys going to Disney every other day just to let the kids run or how you know, that's one of the unique concepts I think that a tiny house brings. Clearly, you know, three kids, two kids, man. I don't think I could do it without driving myself insane.
Look, the kids need their own space.
Yeah.
Like, I understand somebody who hearing this might be thinking to themselves, you know, Rattledge, the kids used to all, you know, they've been nine kids on the farm, on the prairie, sleeping
dirt
in the
floor.
Same bed. Yeah.
Dirt floor and all that. Yeah.
Okay, but there was also a time before penicillin and dinosaurs roamed the earth and, you know, we sacrificed people in volcanoes and nailed Jewish carpenters to crosses. Maybe we don't have to do everything that we did back in the day. Maybe there's a better way. I'm willing to sacrifice a lot and make my kids sacrifice a lot to be better people and better prepared adults for the future. I don't think my son and my daughter have to have the same room. I think they can have their own separate rooms, and I don't feel like I'm being Mr. Muddy Pants.
You got a room, yeah. And you got a room.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, fancy pants. Everyone has to have their own room.
I think it was a neat concept to see. What they were trying to do. I know there's actually a whole documentary on tiny houses. I don't know if you've seen that anywhere through your Netflix scrolling or not, but I attempted to watch a little bit of that probably about a few months back. The concept always looked neat to me, but because it forces you to change the way you live.
Yes.
That's the main thing. Obviously, if you have a teeny tiny little house, you're going to interact with each other more and you're going to be looking for space probably at the same time. You're going to be, okay, I've got to leave, guys. I've got to leave. Just hey,
not for nothing, but I don't want to be in this house half the time now with the kids.
Oh, man, I feel you, dude.
Do you do that? Do you just be like, listen, I'll take the kids fucking anywhere just so I don't have to be in the house. I'll let them destroy the house.
Oh, yes. Yeah. And what I've realized is, and you may see this yourself, but, you know, with three kids, I got an 11-year-old, I got a 6-year-old and a 3-year-old. And what it is I noticed that if I take one element, because it could be getting rowdy in here, people, you know, and getting arguments happening every 2 seconds. So I figure out that I need to remove one element and the whole vibe of this place finally starts to chill out. So whether it be the 6-year-old who's doing flip-flops off of the couch and then or take the 11-year-old girl out of the situation because, you know, she's just got sassy pants on. Well, let's go do something. But yes. Yeah. Just get out of the house so the house can recover in some way. That's definitely something that's happened here in the Starcher household. You got anything that stuck out to you in this documentary that?
Yeah, let's talk about the dirty hippie dude and what's his face there? Creepy Face.
Yes.
Okay. So this took two tries for me to get it through. Now, granted, one of those tries wasn't fair to the film. I'm watching it in the middle of the night, in between constipation, back pain, acne cough, and exhaustion. Oh, and I'm coming off an amphetamine. Mm. So I might not have been in the best state of mind.
No.
But I did try to watch it to take my mind off my failing body. And, I got about 40 minutes into it before I fell asleep or died or whatever it was that happened to me. But I just gave up watching it. I remember thinking to myself, I find the concept interesting. I find the presentation of these two douche nozzles to be a real turnoff. And again, I'll fully admit that this may be my own, maybe it's a prejudice. Maybe I'm judging them unfairly, but they just came across as pretentious.
Okay.
And I think they went out of their way to try not to be. But I'll tell you the first thing that set me off, to be honest with you. The one dude is like, bring it in. I'm a hugger. Fuck you. Get away from me. Don't touch me. I just want to be, if you as a dude ever say to me, bring it in, I'm a hugger, I'm calling the cops and you're getting mace in the eyes.
Oh, goodness.
Touch me and tell me you're a hugger. Yeah, that you are.
Remember that, folks.
You are. Handshakes, that's what men do. Give me a fist bump.
Oh, come on, bro. Come in here. Come on. Yeah,
don't touch me. You're filthy.
Now, come on. You can't. A guy wants to hug another dude, and you're giving this guy crap. I mean, yes. Come on.
No, he did it in the most obnoxious way. People are just like, hi, I find your concept of minimalism interesting. I'm not sure how you, in practice, it would work. What do you think about this? Bring it in, bro. I'm a hugger. Listen, I'm not into your sexual fetishes, okay? I just want to know about minimalism.
Just got a question here. That's it. That's just a question.
Yeah.
Well, I don't talk unless you hug. I'm sorry.
It seemed a little culty. I'm just saying.
All right.
And then the other guy, again, I'm not going to say he is pretentious. I don't know that to be certain. He just came across as, I don't know. I just felt like he came across a little douchey. Can I say that?
I think you already have.
I just found him disingenuous.
Okay. I watched it for the second time today. And one of the things I realized that what I didn't realize was like, okay, this is going to be a documentary about minimalism. And the first time I watched it, oh yeah, there's some neat concepts. But then I watched it again the second time and I start to realize that, you know, this documentary, a good portion of it is them just about going around and spreading the word and all the fun that they've had doing it. Like, hey, yeah. we're on Good Morning America. And
yeah, I was bored as shit during those things. That might be my problem.
Okay.
Is that might be the issue I'm having with this is when you heard about the different aspects of, first of all, it's a little slow to get started.
Sure.
It's a little slow to get started. I would have liked to have seen a little bit more of their, like, you see the one guy going through like his apartment and saying, this is what I did. Okay. That I didn't mind. That was fine. It was actually one of the few parts that didn't seem creepy or douchey.
Yeah.
But you don't get to see the other guy's attempt at minimalism. He's just espousing his views when you talk to him. And, you know, when you see him on screen, and when you talk to him, if you're talking to him, you have a different problem. His whole rap through the movie is he's just giving the information in a very static way, or you're watching him perform. And it's like, okay, but if you're going to make yourself the same, Michael Moore, say what you will about his documentaries, he's a dynamic personality. When he's on screen, boy, is he on screen. It's a bad joke, get it?
No.
Hi-yo. Turn the keys, everybody. It's delicious. But Michael Moore makes his movies about him. He's trying to get across a point of view. You know, if you look at Capitalism, A Love Story, for example, he was absolutely trying to say that the people, you know, at the top of the heap in the financial world are taking advantage of lack of knowledge, manipulating things. There has to be regulation because people left in a place where the goods aren't guarded are going to steal.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if they could get away with theft, they will, because there's money to be had. And whether you agree with that point or not, he at least makes trying to put that point across interesting. He does funny things. He puts himself, he absolutely creates situations that are at minimum entertaining on screen. You know, him forcing his way into buildings and getting thrown out, you know. So when you watch one of these Michael Moore documentaries, you're at least watching something dynamic happen on screen.
Yeah.
There's nothing dynamic happening in when he's on screen. He's just there talking to the camera. The other guy at least makes an effort to do an action in the scenes that he's in. Come, let me show you my suitcase. All right, that wasn't the most interesting thing I've ever seen, but at least he tried. You know, let's look at my house. Here's an example of what I'm talking about. In other words, film is a... Okay, everyone, take a drink. Film is a visual medium. You have to show, don't just tell. The other guy and his stupid tied-on pieces of wood shoes just tells you, doesn't show you shit. The other guy at least tried.
Okay. All right, now, to be fair, the director of Minimalism is... I don't think he has much of a credit other than this. This I'm looking at his IMDb right now. Matt Devella. I doubt I'm pronouncing that correctly, but he has nothing else to his name on here other than that, other than the documentary we watched. So Michael Moore, he's not. That's for sure. But again, and that might be what we're looking at here. We're looking at somebody's for a first effort. I'll give the guy some credit for sure. Okay, so there's your critique of the documentary. Anything else you'd like to critique about it? Anything else off the top of your head other than the production value or what you've seen?
I mean, the parts that didn't involve the two of them I liked a lot.
Okay.
I think the only other criticism I would have is some of the – I didn't feel like there – I just watched a documentary I think called Food Politics, what it was called. And, you know, it was all about how ketogenic, you know, high protein, low carb diet is a bunch of nonsense.
Mm-hmm.
And it was really more of a plea to eat a plant-based diet, leave the animals alone. And they actually made a point in the documentary of saying, you know, there's this need to always have two sides of an issue being presented, but there is no other side to this. Eating animals is wrong. Eating a plant-based diet is good for your health. And it's a sustainable planet saving lifestyle, and it's kind to animals. These are all good things. There's no good counter argument. It's like, well, what's the counter argument to shooting a motherfucker in the head? All right. Fair point to you. But I felt like I would have liked to have seen more of a balance. Here's the thing. Documentaries can be two things. They can be informational. They can be a presentation of facts, of data, of events. They can tell you a story, or they can be an infomercial.
Yes.
This felt like an infomercial.
Okay. All right. Well, they certainly weren't trying to sell anything other than the idea. Well, maybe their book. That's about the only
their book. did you miss 90% of the film when they were selling the book?
I guess I did miss that part. But the concept of minimalism, I will agree with you that we could have seen a lot more of the method than, you know, the process of them trying to get the word out.
I would have liked to have seen somebody go through, to your point, I would have liked to have seen somebody starting off. I mean, they didn't have to do an episode of Hoarders or anything like that. That would have been funny, actually.
No.
We've gone into this woman's house that smells like cat piss and death. True story, by the way. I can't give the woman's name, but we knew a friend who was ostensibly hoarding, and it was so bad, it actually made another one of my friends sick and have to move back to Ohio.
Wow.
That was a fun day. So I can just imagine like these two guys like walking away. We've gone to this warrior's house, and we're gonna make her a minimalist. No, I am fine with my house. You know, some shit like that. That would have been entertaining.
Wow. You know, I want to tell you a story real quick. It ties into almost exactly what you just said. When I sat down and watched this documentary first with my wife, okay? Now, my wife comes from a family who her mom was either, I don't know if we would say ill, but there was definitely hoarding tendencies, okay? Just to give you an example, when my wife moved in with me, when we got married in 98, we came back in 2003. The house was bad enough that the children's services got called.
Oh no.
Yes. They took one step into the house, looked at Mindy's mom. Now Mindy has three younger sisters. Okay. Mindy was obviously full grown and, you know, living with me, we were married, but you know, the sisters were not. So the CPS looked at Mindy's mom and says, you have a week to get this place cleaned up, and the kids have to be out of here until it gets cleaned up. So Mindy's mom up and left and went to North Carolina with the kids because there was no hope for that house.
Okay.
She ended up giving the house over to her brother. Mindy has pictures. We came back home sometime in 2003 just to visit. And we went in. Mindy wanted to grab a few things because it was in transition. Mindy's mom wasn't living there. Her uncle wasn't living there. So we had to go into the house, and Mindy wanted to grab a few things. Well, we had a digital camera, and we took some pictures of what the place looked like. I mean, there was Mindy's mom, Mindy's dad, and the three kids all living there. We walked into the back. You know the lint you take out of your dryer?
Yeah.
Okay. Imagine a stack of lint about, I don't know, 3 feet tall on top of the dryer. They had a dog, and of course everything that come with that. It was a scary environment. Yeah, it was a scary environment. That's what my wife grew up with. She has those tendencies. And I'm not saying I'm perfect, but you know, she has a really hard time getting rid of things because she was used to almost everything being kept at her house. Of course, right now, as I mentioned, we're in the process of trying to figure out where the hell we're going to live at next because we're getting ready to move. A place we rent is getting sold. So we are going through. You should see, I took a picture when we did the crap episode of Flintstones of what my basement looked like. I honestly have gotten rid of, I've made a dent, we'll just put it that way, took it to Goodwill. So we're going through all this stuff that we've had. And I kid you not, Mark Radulich, we've not touched some of it in years. In years. When we were watching this documentary, my wife was just she was caught up in this whole concept of reducing everything. We don't need this. I got this box over here, stuff. I don't need it anymore. I was like, please, please make some, you know, let this be the turnaround point. And that was one of the things when we come away from this document, she sat down and watched the whole thing with me. It changed. I say it changed. It opened her eyes to a lot. And she really seriously had the motivation that day to get up and start, you know, okay, we don't need that. We've got those three lunch pails for the kids. We don't need that. We just need one. So it, if anything I can say about this documentary, I didn't know what we were getting into when I suggested it, because when I suggested it, I'd never seen it, but I knew of the concept. So the one thing I could say that I took away from it is I enjoyed watching it with my wife and seeing how it actually opened her eyes to living like that, reducing what you have, reducing the possessions that you really don't need. That could take a lot of weight off your shoulders.
Well, let me tell you, first of all, that your wife and mine should go bowling.
Okay.
She has a mom who tends to cling to things. And we actually said this before, and she was like, did you really go on your podcast and call me a hoarder? I said, I did.
That's an exaggeration.
I said, you weren't a clinical hoarder. I just, you know, and she actually got a little offended. She's like, Jesus Christ. So, you know, and then of course she pulled a Monty Python on me. She's like, I got better. but she came, not the same situation that you just described, something a little bit different. It was more of everything in the house had a ascribed meaning to it. Mm-hmm. Everything was valuable.
It's sentiment. It's sentiment.
Yeah, absolutely. Everything had a memory. Mm-hmm. And she just grew up differently than I did. So we were also coming from two different places age-wise. I had been through several moves and marriage, da, 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 and I'd lost a lot over the years. So, you know, for me, a lot of the value of possessions in terms of sentiment was numb, you know, just dead to me. She hadn't gone through that. Mm-hmm. She still had stuff from when she was a little kid. I have nothing from when I was a child. I have one thing from when I was elementary school age that I have given to my son. And it's my framed picture of Scrooge McDuck in his money bank from the DuckTales era.
Nice.
Yeah, that's about the only thing I own from my childhood. So that, you know, so with that being said, you know, she actually watched this with me too. She really liked it.
Yeah.
You know, she was really into it, and she has already come to the realization, and she has gotten rid of a lot of stuff, that things are not as valuable as she thinks they are. It is better to unburden yourself with a lot of the nonsense you're just hanging on to than to keep it lying around as an ornament or just taking up precious space in your home.
Oh yeah.
Her mom can somewhat afford to do it. They have a large attic. They have like a house that's twice. They are wealthy people, and they have a house that is twice the size of ours. But there's also only two of them living in the house now. Mm-hmm. You know, their two kids, you know, Melissa and her brother, are gone. And so a lot of stuff went into my brother-in-law's room, and you know, her room has become, you know, the kids' nursery basically. So you know, cuz they spent a lot of time like at the in-laws. So she, you know, not quite the conversion that Mindy had, but definitely a tacit acknowledgement of, yes, we need to continue, because they talked about it in the documentary. You know, you asked me, what else did I like about it? The section I enjoyed the most was being a minimalist with kids.
Yeah.
And the guy said something that I thought, one, validated me. I'm going through a lot right now, and a lot of my beliefs are being challenged. A lot of my attitudes and feelings are being challenged. And I'm having to make a lot of personal psychological adjustments as I'm getting older, and my life is changing. Mm-hmm. And that's very hard for me. It would be hard for anybody, as my wife and I both acknowledge, when you've been one way for decades of your life and suddenly you've hit the wall and you realize you have to change. That can be difficult.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
So finding at least an area where I felt validated was like, oh, my God, this is better than heroin. Not that I know that from personal experience, but I'm just saying. it was nice to feel like I know what I'm talking about every once in a while. And so the guy is like, yeah, I went through my son's stuff with my son, and he was okay with giving stuff away. Like, oh, good. I'm not the only one that does this. You know, I sat down with my son before Christmas and said, we need to go through all your toys. Half of it you're giving to Nicholas. Half of it you're giving to Kieran. These are his cousins that are both somewhere in their infancy. And half of it, three halves, everybody. I'm a math major. And half of it is going to Goodwill. Or going to Once Upon a Child to be resold. And whatever doesn't get sold is going to Goodwill. And he was like, okay. Now, my son's interpretation of this particular event was, give everything to Kieran. poor Nicholas. He got you. I had to kind of move things around on Jonas. But Jonas was, you know, Jonas was very much okay. And we did this, like, I think, in, like, November, beginning of December, somewhere in there. He was very much okay with, yeah, I don't play with these things anymore. It's fine. Give them to the baby.
Yeah.
So this idea of your children have to have all the things is propaganda.
Oh, yeah. Oh, man.
And the other side of that was when they started talking about marketing children,
yes,
you know, bypassing the parent and directly marketing the children, and there was an allusion to the harmful effects of screens on young children. I mean, we're guilty of that. We are absolutely guilty of iPadding the children.
Oh, yeah.
And we are trying to correct it because it's like we did it out of somewhat laziness and somewhat we didn't think there would be a harm to it. And then we found out there was, and then we saw it with our own eyes as very quickly, she was from 4 or 5 when we made this discovery, that this was turning her into a crack addict with the iPad.
Oh, man.
You know, like, if she had the iPad for an extended period, then you took it away, she'd cry. And we're not talking, like, cry like being a brat. We're talking cry like withdrawal.
Ugh.
Yeah. So, lesson learned, there's not a lot of iPad time happening anymore. And that all got brought up in a thing. We actually made my daughter watch the segment on marketing directly to children. You know, my daughter's takeaway on things is always, you know, it's always a gamble. So it's very fun, the kinds of things she comes up. Lily, what did you think of the presidential election? That man wore pants. All right. Good. Lily, there's 900 men in this movie. One woman. What was your favorite part? The one with the woman. All right, Lily. Very good. Her takeaway from that part of minimalism was, I don't want to be tricked into buying things. Like, you know, it's very perceptive.
Yeah, it is. It is. It really is.
That part of the documentary I really, really liked and how it was presented. And I think overall, looking into the different approaches to minimalism is what made the documentary interesting. But it also doesn't really happen until, I feel like, the second half or the last two-thirds of the movie. So that first part, where you're just with Dude the Two Douche Nozzles, is a bit of a slog.
Let me ask you real quick about the whole toys and kids, okay? Have you ever sat down and taken notice of what the kids play with and what they don't play with?
Have I told you the story of the Batman and Joker toys I bought my son?
No. Please do.
No, you have heard the story. That was me being facetious.
Okay, then. Well, maybe our listeners haven't. How's that?
No, they all heard the Christmas show, Jesse.
That is right. I forgot. Yes. Yes.
Okay, so I think that answers your question, is my point.
Okay, all right. Well, you know, I sit here at my house, and honest to goodness, I look at the toys that the kids play with. Then I look at the toys the kids don't play with. There's probably at least 80% of the toys that we have in this house are not being used.
Right.
And it's a matter of, you know, once the kids see them, like we got a big old bin of toys down here. And once the kids see them, then the kids, you know, oh, hey, I haven't seen that. I want to play with that. Well, you know, he's just getting ready to throw it away. But I guess you can play with it for a little bit. But if it's there in front of their face, they'll play with it for like maybe a day and then they're done.
Right.
I've started to notice patterns. Like I told Mindy, watch what Caleb does. Okay. And then that would probably give us a good idea of what he would need or we should maybe get him for Christmas. And one of the best presents we got this kid was 500 sheets of computer paper because he loves to draw. That
you could have also gotten him a sketch pad.
Oh yeah, whatever. I'm getting the best bang for my buck, Mark Radlich.
Oh, okay.
There you go. But
dual use, Scott, I understand.
He that's all, you know, he would come home, sit down on his table, turn on the TV and draw for a good hour or so, and then he would go to the living room, watch more YouTube or play a video game. He wouldn't touch that mountain of toys. So it is therapeutic to just really focus on, or it's smart to focus on what these kids want and get the other the shit that they don't need out of there. Yeah. Or I should say focus on what the kids do. Because if you just focus on that, they're going to be completely happy. And get the rest of that as take up space, minimalize.
I definitely, you know, if you haven't heard this story, I basically went crazy and like bought my son a couple of 12-inch Batman dolls. And Amazon sent me not what I ordered, and I wanted what I ordered because that's what I thought would be best for my son. And like, he gives a fucking shit. You know? Yeah, it's. Melissa said something to me tonight. She was like, "You are over planning, and you are trying to control things you have no control over, and it's probably not helping your health."
It's when that wrench gets thrown into your system that worries me. That's the thing that worries me.
Well, you have right. You are right to be worried. I had this overly complex approach to buying Christmas presents based on really what I wanted. Mm-hmm. You know, it became about buying presents for my son became more about me than it did about him. Because if I watched him, I know he's played with them because I see them out of the toy box. But if I look at what he brings into the living room, he's got a plane in his hand. He's got a space shuttle. He's got a car. He's got a train. You know, you're absolutely right. If I had gotten him one present,
yep,
he'd have been happy with that one. You know, and it's so funny because, like, we actually, and this is actually a gimmick with her side of the family. Well, we're cutting back this year. You know, Christmas always looks like fucking JCPenney's throw up in the living room. but it takes hours to go through the Christmas presents at my in-laws. And God bless them. I love them for it. But it becomes very overwhelming. Half the time, you don't even know what you got because it's happening too fast. And I look at my kids, and it's like they have a handful of things that they're like really excited about that they want to play with, and the rest of it just sort of sits around.
Mm-hmm. Takes up space, and it doesn't get used.
Right.
You know, you sit there and think about that kid in Ethiopia that could be playing with that toy right now.
Yeah, that's what he needs. the one with the distended belly and the flies.
The flies on his eyes.
Needs a fucking Batman doll.
Hey. Maybe it take his mind off of being hungry. You're horrible. So
I'm horrible. Kid's gonna eat the doll, first of all. Gets hungry.
Well, I got one more question. Would you recommend this to anybody?
Yeah, why not? I mean
No, I wouldn't.
No, I mean it's not the worst thing I've ever seen. I thought there was value to what the message was, obviously. It's something I certainly believe in. I do think, here's the thing. You wanted to talk about this movie with me, so I was open to watching, but I was already converted. I have already been practicing and believing in the concept of minimizing. I mean, for the last couple of years, my wife and I have decided to not buy each other expensive gifts. I mean, she bought me a couple of comics. I bought her some like adult coloring books and shit like that. I bought her, you know, like a Beatles Lego Yellow Submarine thing. She's a big fan of the Beatles, and I figured her and the kids could put it together because they like Legos. But, you know, last year for Christmas, she got me tickets to go see Jim Norton. And every year that we can get to it, my parents buy me tickets to go see WrestleMania.
Uh-huh.
We decided a while back that we wanted to do, you know, experiential type things as gifts because we both own plenty of crap. I am trying to get rid of the crap. I recently went on a pawning expedition of DVDs, podcasting equipment, gaming equipment, and everything that wasn't nailed fucking down that I could get my hands on. I actually got in trouble with my wife not that long ago because in the midst of cleaning up before I got the plague, I went through our bedroom and cleaned it out. And in doing so, I gave to Goodwill a blanket that she wanted.
Mm-hmm.
You know, to me, it's just sitting in a corner collecting dust and cat dander. But this was apparently something she wanted. And I was like, man, I didn't know that at the time because why was it sitting there? And I got rid of it, you know?
Yep.
I'm always looking around the house for stuff we can get rid of. We have a stereo that used to be providing our surround sound. It no longer does since we changed televisions. And so basically, it's just an ornament.
Yeah, it's just sitting there.
And it's just like, I just haven't gotten around to ripping it out of the entertainment center and running it down to the pawn shop. I've got two shelves full of books. And I just bought all these comic books and I have nowhere to put them. And I'm like, I gotta figure out what I'm gonna do with these books, because like they're just ornaments now. Mm-hmm. And this, and again, it goes back to what I said on source material. This is why I don't want to buy anything physical anymore. Things that I purchase are virtual, with the exception of comic books because of my eyesight. And then everything else, I just want to be experiential. I want to go see Iron Maiden and Ghost. I want to go see Testament and Sepultura and Prom. I want to go see WrestleMania. I fucking wanted to go see NXT, but that got sold out. I want to go see U2 perform the Joshua Tree at Raymond James Stadium. I want to go out there and live life. I don't want to sit in my house surrounded by worthless stuff. So watching this documentary was like, it was entertaining, most of it. I agreed with their message, but it was like, yeah, I'm already converted.
Yeah, it was more of an affirmation.
Yeah, if anything, it was, I definitely shot my wife a few looks while we were watching, going, see, I'm fucking as per usual, I'm obnoxious.
Buddy, I wish I could tell you the amount of glances my wife gave me as we were going through stuff for Goodwill here.
Did she think you were setting her up?
She knew. Well, it was funny because she made a mention when we watched this show. She was like, I know why you made me sit down and watch this. I said, now look,
did she follow that up with, you motherfucker?
I've got to do a podcast on this. I mean, come on. But no, as we were going through things to get, you know, scaled down so we can move and not be over encumbered with a bunch of heavy shit to move, one of the hardest things we got rid of over the weekend was a comforter. An Aladdin comforter that I got her for her 16th birthday, which sat down here in this basement for 10 years, Mark Radulich. But when she pulled it out of that thing and she looked at it and she had almost this tear in her eye, like, I can't, Jesse. I was like, look, we have 6 comforters that we use. This one that's sitting down in this bin is not going to make you feel any different. I said, get your camera out. This is one thing. This is a method that I've come up with. I want to share this real quick. Use your digital camera on your phone. Mike's son, I've already said, draws all the time. Well, a lot of times he'll come to me and he'll say, Daddy, I made this for you. And I can't break his heart and go, hey, thanks, throw it in the trash. So what I've done is I'll set it aside, and about a month or so later, I'll take a picture of it and then trash it. And so, you know, when Mindy had this tear in her eye with this comforter, I said, why don't you get your camera out and I'll take a picture of it. Same thing with my mom. I don't know if you had a chance to see that picture that I posted of me and my mom, where I was holding up the Popeye blanket that she bought me when I was 3 years old. Sitting down here in that same bin with that fucking Aladdin blanket. And I told Mindy, I said, this is either going to the Goodwill or it's going to go to my mom. Now, my mom has clothes from 1973. So I asked my mom, I said, I'm either going to get rid of this or Goodwill. I'm either going to Goodwill this or you can take it home. And she's like, she looked at it and she paused for like a second. And she goes, I'm taking it home. I said, all right. I said, let's get a picture with it while you're going out the door. So there's this sentiment, but it's unnecessary sometimes. It's very unnecessary. And for me, you're there. Me, buddy, I'm telling you what, I'm still processing. I have my PS2 that's been sitting over here, not even hooked up to a TV.
Get rid of it.
I can't bring myself to get rid of it. I'm like, oh man, maybe I want to play these games again someday.
You're ridiculous. When are you going to play those games?
I know, man. And I tell myself that, want to get rid of it.
Let me, you're a hoarder. fucking pot calling kettle black over here. Listen, I begged, like, you know, my in-laws are not into gift cards and they're not into Amazon wish lists and they're not into virtual media. Mm-hmm. They want Christmas for them is watching their children. And even though I am married and almost 41 fucking years old, I am one of the children, as I have been told several times while I am ranting and raving. but that's a story for another day, children. That Christmas for them is about watching their children open gifts. That's why they buy so many. That's why they do what they do. And so every year I have to come up with a physical gift. What's my gift from Santa going to be? You know, I have to struggle for the gift that I'm getting from Santa. And I'm a huge fan of, everyone pick up your drinks. Ready? Drink. I'm a huge fan of Rock Band and Guitar Hero.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I have just pawned all my Rock Band stuff that I had for the Wii, and I pawned all the Guitar Hero stuff, because as much as I like to just kind of zone, playing Rock Band or playing Guitar Hero for me is therapeutic. It's one of those mindless games that doesn't frustrate the fuck out of me. So, like, I don't like to play a lot of video games because I'm not as good as some of these guys that just, like, commit themselves to it. And some of them just make me sick. Like, I can't do, like, Call of Duty and shit like that. Just a constant spinning around. Like, I don't get seasick, but that'll make me vomit. Mm. So, Rock Band is one of those things that meets two of my criteria. It's mind-numbingly easy, and it's music-related. So I can just sit there and play the guitar and listen to music that I like, and I can sort of decompress a lot of the stuff that goes on through my day. That's what I said, it's therapeutic. And I have played it all of once since I got it for Christmas.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I still have my Xbox. And I have Lego Jurassic World, and I have a bunch of other Lego games. I love the Lego series. That's another one where, you know, the honest game trailer for some of these Lego games is just like, oh, if you like playing puzzle games that were meant for children, I do. I don't want to think very hard about this. And even those sometimes are a little frustrating because they make
I've had to hop on the fucking internet at least four or five times playing the Lego Jurassic World.
Yeah.
That is a sad, sad day when a man has to go onto the internet for cheats for a fucking kids game.
Oh, I do it all the time. There are things that I don't know how the fuck. I don't know what I'm doing, and I'll just watch YouTube until I figure it out.
There we go.
But like I said, there are games I have not played since I bought them because I don't have the amount of, I don't have time to sit in front of the. Actually, the other part of it is my kids want to do whatever it is I'm doing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if I'm smoking crack, they want to smoke crack too. That's what I'm saying. So, if you're listening, DCF, I don't smoke crack. But what playing a video game is something, again, therapeutic for me, and I don't really want to do it with my kids because they're dumb and they don't understand how games work, being, you know, 6 and 3. You know what I'm talking about, Jesse.
Oh, my goodness.
You know, go up. No, I want to jump in the river. But, oh, fuck. Okay.
I've got stories, my friend. Many a story.
I had to walk out of the room once. she was playing Lego Marvel, and she was using Black Widow and Hawkeye. And I'm like, okay, Lily, you want to do this to go to the next mission? She's like, no, I want to make them run around the city.
That's like they just need to release that game. Okay, here's your characters run around the city because that's all Caleb wants to do. And yeah, I'm like, dude, we got a mission. No, I want to take the car and I want to drive around and obey all the traffic laws. Well, all right, man, go right ahead.
Yeah, I can't take it. So I could literally leave the room. So I don't do those things because I would rather spend time with my kids, and I would rather not spend time with an activity with my kids that makes me want to strangle them.
Yes, yes.
So I guess what I'm trying to say is sell your fucking PS2, you know.
Get rid of it, man. I hear you. All right, last thing, and then we could close up shop here. There was this floored me. There was a little bit of a video that they played from, I think it's Jimmy Carter, who's that final thing, which, wow, that was timely. Back in, I assume, what was the 70s. So yeah, I'm not the political guru. I know it wasn't the 80s. It could have been 1980, maybe. I don't know. But anyway, one of the things I believe he said was that human identity now is not what one does, but what one owns.
In a nation that was proud of hard work, strong families, close-knit communities, and our faith in God, too many of us now tend to worship self-indulgence and consumption. Human identity is no longer defined by what one does, but by what one owns. But we've discovered that owning things and consuming things does not satisfy our longing for meaning. We've learned that piling up material goods cannot fill the emptiness of lives which have no confidence or purpose.
Do you think that's the absolute truth?
Yeah. Yeah, I couldn't agree more.
And that's the way it shouldn't be. Would you agree?
You know what I wanted to see more of? I wanted to see more shots of Black Friday shopping. People knocking over displays and like
getting into fights.
My favorite part of the documentary is that cell phone footage of the two women fighting over the box, which the first time I watched that, all right, I'm going to let my racism come out. First time I watched that, I was just like, oh, sure, the black woman's attacking the white woman. Oh, figures.
Uh-huh.
And then I watched it again with my wife and I went, oh, shit, it's the white person's fault. My bad.
And it was the white chick that was like yelling too.
Yeah, yeah. She totally fucking takes the box out of this poor child's hand. And I'm more like impoverished. I mean, devastated child. She attacks this child basically. She's a piece of shit white woman. And then the mother. I would have had more sympathy towards the mother and probably would have jumped to a totally racist conclusion if she was like, don't attack my child. How dare you take the box out of her hand?
Yes.
And instead, she's fucking goozling this woman, and she's just like, Ma, give me back that box. It's just looking like, what the fuck is happening here? You know, like it was felt like it was less about don't attack the child and more about we need more stuff. Give me the box. And she had one in her hand already. Like,
yeah.
Why did I need it too? I didn't understand either. But
have you ever went Black Friday shopping?
I will never. I go out on Black Friday to the Christmas tree farm in the country here in Florida to get a Christmas tree.
Yes.
And we went to go see Moana. Not Moana. We went. Yeah, it was Moana. It was a day. It was Black Friday. And we went to go see Moana. That's about all I'm doing on Black Friday.
Yeah, fuck you all that noise, man.
Yeah, you couldn't pay me to go to an actual, like, store.
No way. I'm right there with you. There, you are not. I have a few days off from work. And the last thing I'm going to be doing is stressing out because I'm in a long ass line in the freezing cold to try and get into a place that I might possibly get trampled over. I do not even think, I don't see the appeal. I really don't, but clearly I'm in the minority here.
Well, I'll tell you, one of my in-laws, my sister-in-law and her sister, they always have to like leave early or whatever because they always go Black Friday shopping. And I asked her, I'm like, why? Just something that they do, you know? There's a thrill of getting a good deal on something, and they find value in, I guess, putting the amount of time and effort in doing that. I even think she was like, oh, this Black Friday sucked this year. There wasn't as good values. And I'm like, why would you even want to put yourself in that position?
Ah, man, I don't understand it either. I would rather be at home, sleeping in, and enjoying getting up, you know, after a Thanksgiving that I've filled myself up on and just relaxing. There's, I don't know. I don't know if it's country boy in me, but there's plenty of people around here that do the same thing. They go out and it's Walmart. They're ready to rock and roll Black Friday. Mark Radulich, thank you for the time here. I'm going to let you, you close it how you want to close it. Thanks for letting me take the reins. I don't know if you have anything else you want to say, but I think I've hit all my points.
No, I think I've rambled long enough. All right. Again, depending on when you're listening to this, I don't want to get into the minutia of this, but this is being recorded well before it's actually going to air live. No, it's not going to air live. Before it airs on the network proper. So there's really no point in doing any plugs except for Green Lantern Week in 2020.
Easy criminy.
I brought that up as an example of I don't plan too far ahead.
I don't think that won your battle there. That argument was not won.
Shot myself in the dick on that one. So I'm not going to bother with any plugs. So I'm just going to simply say thank you, Jesse, for making me the man in the box and making me watch this documentary. I thought this was a great discussion. Always fun talking to you. You and I seem to be eye to eye in a lot of things. So thank you for being a part of Because Name Made Me.